On tonight's agenda, we have the 41-year-old grandfather of the House of Keys. Ewan Watterson was reappointed to the role of Speaker following the election, but is that the extent of his political ambition? Tonight I'm scrutinising the island's most experienced political scrutineer and trying to get answers. Young Mr. Watterson is always entertaining, and his fascinating insights into Manx politics are not to be missed. So what do a geography teacher, an ex-member of the armed forces, have to offer the non-democratically accountable branch of Tynwald?
I like chatting to you, Phil. No way there's a loaded question in there at all, is there? They do have great skills that have come out. What, of course, people outside often forget is that we are not interviewing for pseudo-MHKs. And that, I think, is often lost. We are obviously looking for people who are members of Tynwald, members of the Legislative Council, but we're not looking for pseudo-MHKs. And there's a different skill set to this. So, yes, we are looking for people who have got an analytical approach, who have the time to devote to legislative scrutiny in a way that members of the House of Keys are drawn in far more directions than just that. So that's, I should imagine, the key skill that members identified in voting for the candidates that they did yesterday, rather than, as has often been pointed out, about their views on public policy and other things, because we have to remember that Legislative Council is there to scrutinise, refine and improve, and at their absolute worst, all they can do is delay. They have no power of veto.
Is LegCo becoming a thing of the past? I mean, effectively, it's an archaic remnant of the old version of Council of Ministers. It's taken over a scrutiny role that the Keys used to have, and in effect allowed Keys members to effectively abrogate their duty in terms of parliamentary scrutiny. Would that be fair?
No. But it's trying to sort of describe what's become quite a complex landscape over the last century. I mean, 100 years ago, the Legislative Council was the executive branch of government, and that has passed sort of seamlessly over the last 100 years to the council ministers, whilst Legislative Council's role has evolved into this legislative scrutiny body. And it's been done sort of very slowly, very quietly, but that has been a quite a transformational shift over the last century. As I say, the role of an MLC is becoming far more clearly defined in the minds of members of the House of Keys collectively now than it was. There has been a long period of considering them as having an equal mandate, but that has been put to bed now as being something that is far less relevant in today's society. But the job of an MHK has morphed so significantly as well. The number of constituents has doubled in that same century. The world is becoming far more complex in terms of the way that we communicate, the demands on members as well, both in terms of executive roles, scrutiny roles and constituency work. The work itself is far more complex. So I have noticed certainly that members tend to spend less time on the detail of legislation than they used to. And that's where Legislative Council is there to pick up that. I think they still very much involve themselves in the policy of the legislation, but perhaps don't then necessarily follow that through into the detail in the same way. And that is a job that's more and more left to Legislative Council. That's just my observations of it, and maybe others would disagree.
And certainly, I mean, I haven't been involved to any extent really in Tynwald for the last 5 years, but the 5 years prior to that, I think it was fair. I think most people would probably agree that you, me, Peter Caron were the three members of the House of Keys who really did scrutinise legislation. And I'm told that obviously you've carried on that tradition. Yeah. Bill Shimmons was very good at scrutinising legislation. So yeah. I suppose many people may be surprised to find that Bill didn't succeed in the recent election.
And Laurie Hooper would probably be the other name that I would add to that in terms of a detailed sort of scrutiny. But, I suppose, Phil, you reflect back to the days of 2006 when I first joined the House of Keys and you were there already. I think there was a lot more attention that to the details of the bill, not just the policies. And I think we're getting far more in terms of the second reading, the clauses about the policies, but not so much the how it should work, but whether it should work this way. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a good division of labour, but it's certainly changed in that last 15 years.
If Keyes is less bothered about the detail, does Keyes actually need to bother studying clauses?
Well, he definitely does need to study clauses, because for each individual clause, there can be a huge amount of policy implications in there. And that's increasingly the case when we look at the legislation that's coming through more these days, which is about framework bills, where back in the old days you'd have had a bill that set out what a department can and can't do in quite prescriptive detail. More and more of that now is getting left to regulations and orders. And so it's really important that those parameters are set in the policy framework. And that is being debated at the clauses stage in a way that wouldn't necessarily have happened in the past.
And I suppose for people listening in who maybe, and I would hope most of them don't understand how the law works, how legislation works, because quite frankly, it's a specialist topic, isn't it? The sort of two styles of drafting legislation, isn't it? There's the rather simplistic style, which effectively empowers departments to do certain things, and then leaves the detail to orders and regulation. And then there was this more prescriptive style where almost everything that the department might expect to do had to be in the primary law, in the Act.
Yeah.
And so we're moving away from that more prescriptive style.
Well, that's certainly been the trend, and the parliamentary reaction to that has been, okay, it's not so much against the framework style of bills, but it's actually to say, what we'll do is we'll say, instead of what used to happen about secondary legislation, which is it just goes on the Tynwald order paper, you get a couple of weeks to look at it, and then it's take it or leave it. We've now introduced this new system on the register that allows members to take those sometimes long and complicated sets of regulations and run them through a bill-like process in the branches. And that's something that's yet to be tried, but that was the brainwave of the last Standing Orders Committee, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how that will work in practice, because it will mirror those provisions. So it may be that it's a framework bill and there's a big chunk of regulations, and things like GDPR are a good example of that, where we had a huge wedge of regulations, and to go through 200 pages of that in a couple of weeks to understand it all, to look at how other countries do it, to do that compare and contrast, to ask the questions, to get the answers back, that's not really realistic. So to take that over a few weeks through the bill stages of the House of Keys in that sort of process, it will mean that even those sort of bits of secondary legislation that maybe haven't had the scrutiny because they have been less important, as they're becoming more important, they're getting that sort of scrutiny that they deserve.
Your role as Speaker effectively precludes you to a certain extent from being actively engaged in policy development. Scrutiny is much more the area that you can focus on in that role. Mm. The results of scrutiny, you end up with select committees, they always have to come back and report something, they have to make recommendations, and often this results in more and more red tape for the government departments that you're scrutinising. Is there maybe a need culturally to change scrutiny as well as a cultural change across government?
Well, I think the first point I'd have to pick you up on there is that the Speaker isn't involved in policy development. I couldn't think of that being further from the truth. I am a member like every other one. Perhaps some of my policy development work in terms of legislation goes on behind the scenes rather than in the on the floor of the House of Keys, but I still get to vote on all that, and I've certainly taken a very proactive role in policy development in Tynwald through the Public Accounts Committee, setting up the Poverty Committee and things like that. So I think I do just want to challenge that assumption before we move on. In terms of the role of scrutiny, it does at its worst have the ability to bind the executive in red tape, but as chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, I'm very much about value for money, and unless the recommendations add the value, then they're not value for money themselves, and that's a filter that we always need to run these recommendations through before they come back to Tynwald. Appreciate it's not always been done that way, but that's certainly something that's marked my time on the Public Accounts Committee.
Because it is one of the one of the weaknesses, I suppose, of any political system, politicians need to be able to wave pieces of paper in front of their constituents to say, well, look, this is what I've achieved. I managed to persuade government, or persuade Tynwald rather, that government needs to do this, this and this to avoid that particular problem. Again, the other thing that politicians are prone to doing is looking for someone to blame when things go wrong. Does this not also have the negative impact of making civil servants super cautious so that they can avoid doing anything wrong? I mean, they don't necessarily get very much done because they are so busy avoiding doing something wrong.
Well, again, a few assumptions there, but I mean, I recall vividly listening to the back and forth banter between you as a minister and the then chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, Mr. Cannon. And I'd say that that was a very different style of doing things. And I think if Public Accounts Committee and other scrutiny committees, they're watchdogs, not Rottweilers. They are there to make sure that people are doing what they should be doing. You should be thinking when you sign a payment request or when you go out to tender, if the Public Accounts Committee read everything that I've got in front of me here, would they be happy with the outcome as well? And I think it's not a bad test for officers to have in their minds when they are thinking about how they're going to go about their jobs. But we are there to test and probe and make sure that things are being done appropriately. But that doesn't mean to say it has to be antagonistic. We shouldn't be driving civil servants into the bunkers for fear of being able to act, but that doesn't mean that they shouldn't act responsibly and be able to justify those actions when questioned.
You're listening to Dewan Watterson, Speaker of the House of Keys. I'm told that the new government plan, the draft government plan, is a great new vision, and is a radical departure from previous plans. I'm also told that actually the pictures have changed. There's fewer words, and it's pretty much more of the same. Obviously, you've had more time to scrutinise this than I have, and you know a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes. How would you assess the draft plan? And is it a little bit too early to really pass judgment?
Yeah, I think it is early days. I think it's hard to badge it as a radical departure from, I mean, I go back to Tony Brown's Big Brown Book of Balls, as it was called, because it had everything in little spheres and in little spheres that came off other spheres and all the ideas. I think there is always a temptation when planning, sitting out that sort of high level document to try and please all the people all the time and to get a bit of everything in there. And so that can't be helped. But what we don't see in this document is really the priorities. And you know where the priorities are because that's where the money's going to go. So when I see a legislative programme and a budget, then I know what really matters to this administration. And that's what I've asked them for by January. That's when you'll really know what the direction of travel is, because at the moment there's a little bit in there for everything and there's plenty of things that everyone can sort of hang a hook on and say, yeah, well, that was in my manifesto or this was something that I asked. But really, where the money goes, where the resources go, that's when you'll really see what the priorities of this administration are.
Tynwald members all tell me that they have been actively engaged in the process. How has that actually worked?
So I think it was the day after the Chief Minister's election, every member was invited to a flip chart session in the Royal Suite. And that was followed up a few weeks later with another session. Sadly, because these are organised pretty much last minute, I wasn't able to attend either of them, but we have been given drafts and they've been circulated around so that people can comment on them, and like all the other members in one form or another, and we've all had the ability to feed back to them, and like every other member, I suppose, I've fed back into it in terms of what I want and then sort of reiterated some of that in the debate in Tynwald recently.
And are you seeing in the new words that have appeared, are you seeing the words of Mr. Speaker, or are these more, is it more generically incorporated into the
I think it's very much generically incorporated. As I say, what we've got at the moment is very broad. I do see a real intent on behalf of the council ministers to engage members and to use the process started in Tynwald recently to start that public conversation. I think it's now the onus is on council ministers to go to the country and test what they've got. I think it will be hard to do that, though, really, without looking at where the money's going to go, without seeing what the legislative programme's going to be, because that's really, as I say, where you're going to see where the priorities really are, because that's really what you need to test at that stage, whether it chimes or not. So it may be that really the more meaningful public engagement after these high-level principles is going to have to be in the spring of next year, when people say, well, that's where the government set its stall out in terms of it's going to spend money in this department and this way on this project, and then that's when we're really going to find out.
And in terms of priorities, you've topped the poll again in Russian, another thumping majority. You've been and talked to all your constituents, and you will have had lots of feedback. So what are the public's set? Maybe if we could focus on a top three set of priorities, what would you say that those would be?
I'd go for housing, the environment, and value for money. So I think there are, housing is a broad church, and there's all sorts in there, from public and private, ability to get on the housing ladder. So I do commend this administration, the Chief Minister, for demonstrating their intent with that by allocating an individual to tackle the housing issue. And I'm surprised it wasn't at a ministerial grade, but at least they've appointed somebody with that particular role in mind and with that latitude to get on and deal with that breadth of issues in housing and get a coherent policy back to Tynwald for us to debate and hopefully approve. I say there's so much we could do a whole program just about housing. So that was one. The second one about the environment, and I have to say all credit to Andrew Langer-Newton, who stood in Russian this time. The approach that he brought was really useful in terms of it made all of us up our game. I mean, I've had the environment and climate change in my manifesto since 2006. Yeah. But he really made everyone up their game here. And that was very obvious on the doorstep as well, that was something that people were more worried about, and they wanted solutions to that. And again, so that was a real positive coming out of the election. And that has become one of the priorities that really does need to be tackled. And I think all bar one member of the House of Keys has come back and agreed. And again, the third one is a pretty broad theme, is value for money, and where people see money wasted and get very frustrated by that when they see grandiose schemes whilst the roads deteriorate. And it's that sort of business as usual, local quality of life things that you'd expect on the doorstep. And I think we got more so by dint of the fact that certainly in Russian there weren't any local authority elections. So people hadn't had the opportunity to vent at commissioner candidates about the Southern Civic Community site or some of the things that really are the purview of the commissioner. So we got a lot of that feedback on the doorstep as well. So needless to say, we'll be catching up with the local authorities to have those sort of conversations in the near future.
And I'm sure they look forward to those conversations. I mean, you touched there, though, about the new housing board, and housing and communities board, the new climate change board. I've spoken to both the chairs, one on the programme, one off the record so far, but both have agreed that at the moment they're largely window dressing. There's no power, there's no money, there doesn't seem to be much by way of staff, there doesn't as yet seem to be much of a plan. Are you starting to get an understanding as to how these boards are going to work, bearing in mind you'll have ministers who fundamentally hold the power required in terms of most of the decisions these chairs will have to make?
No, not yet, but they're questions that we've been asking as well, and that's why I say that for all the virtues of the government plan, it's not until we see what the legislative programme is, where the resources are going to go, that we'll really understand what the priorities are. And that's exactly underlined the point.
You're obviously you're the grandfather of the house, which is quite an interesting and amusing concept, bearing in mind you're, what are you now,
41.
You've got lots of political experience. You never at any point thought that maybe chief minister was the role for you?
I think the one thing that put me off being chief minister was sitting around the council ministers table. Chief ministers being a bit like the ringmaster of a circus. I mean, you can book the acts, but you can't tell them which way to jump. And I don't know if that was really what I wanted. What I really enjoyed at Home Affairs was the ability to take a department to grapple with the issues that it faced and present solutions and deliver them and be able to come out the other side of that and say, yes, that's something that I was in charge of. I was able to run and do that. I don't think the Chief Minister has that luxury, and I think that I would have found that overly frustrating. But one thing that I've learned in politics in the last 15 years is you never say never, but I'm happy with the job that I'm doing. I really love being Speaker. I get to dabble in all sorts of different things. The variety is the spice of life. And that's one of the things that makes politics a fascinating job. You just don't know what's going to come into your inbox that day and the problems that need sorting out. And so, again, while I loved Home Affairs, it's a great department, fantastic people working there. That was one area, and I do love the whole breadth of public policy and be able to roll up my sleeves and solve problems right across the board. And that's where being Speaker is really liberating. Likewise, being Chairman of the Public Accounts Committee gives me the opportunity to look at all sorts of different areas with the training I've had.
And again, part of your role as Speaker is to, I suppose, wrap a comforting arm around particularly the newer members of the House of Keys.
Absolutely.
And you've had two quite hefty intakes of new members to do that with. So I suppose this time around you'll be more familiar with undertaking that role. But in terms of the new members, how difficult is it for new members to actually get up to speed and properly understand their role and how it all works?
I think I've really seized on during my time as Speaker this need to get newer members particularly and bring them up to speed as fast as I can. The analogy I'd use is that a rising tide raises all boats, and the faster that they can get up and running and starting to deliver for their constituency, the better it is for everyone. And that's something that I think is marked contrast to when I first started, where you were kind of left to get on with it. You were very much on your own. We had a half a day induction, which was basically cycling the staff of the clerk at Inwell's office through the Millennium Room and introducing them, and they told you what they did, and then they went off, and then you were left to get on with it. Now, in 2006, there were six of us came at the same time, and we tried to navigate the system together. We were a pretty diverse bunch, the six of us. Well, I say diverse, but all men, but apart from it, all came from different backgrounds. And we tried to sort of navigate our way through that together. And that was the way of coping with it then. So since then, big changes. I've taken on doing designing and working with the staff on a CPD program for members during the last administration. That's led its way to a far fuller induction program now. It's over a couple of weeks, trying to get all this information into members' heads. And then there'll be an ongoing program so that they can develop more of the skills that they need. As MHKs, only in the last house, after sort of almost 15 years worth of parliamentary service, I do a mental health 2-day first aid course and think, why the heck have I never done this before? So important, it's going to help me so much in terms of being able to help and signpost people in an area that's got growing issues. So all of these different things, all these different skills, all these different signposting that is so much a part of being an MHK, it's really important to hand that over rather than think that knowledge is power, which I think was kind of the attitude 15 years ago.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Gurumai Moyu, thank you very much for joining us on the show. I know you've got to go off and induce some MLCs now.
Induct.
Legislation, parliamentary scrutiny, standing committees are a world away from most of our lives, but it's essential work, and I, for one, am glad we have people like the Speaker doing this work to hopefully make our lives better. The jury appears to be out on the new draft government plan, and I'm sure we all look forward to seeing some meat on the draft vision's bones. So far, my attempt to get a minister to talk about the government plan have been met with coy obfuscation, but if there are any ministers listening, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the plan and how the public can engage and give feedback. For now, though, I'm Phil Gorn. Gurumayu. Thanks for listening.